Hello, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, Stepping Up. My name is Sue Reed, and every week I provide a platform for people to tell their story of how they have faced and overcome a challenge in their life. Here is today's story. My guest today is Dr. Jason Gould of the Chislehurst Chiropractic Clinic, which he runs with his wife and team. Now, that's not just a chiropractic clinic. The team have also expanded into a whole range of well-being areas with workshops and massage, etc. Jason has also written a book called Thrive, which gives you steps to reduce stress and to live a life where basically you are thriving rather than just surviving. Jason also has a special interest in sports injuries, and this has led him to working with the England karate squad. However, from the age of 6 to 18 years old, Jason suffered severe bullying at school, and this is a story that Jason joins me to talk about today. So welcome to the show, Jason. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Sue.
Lovely. So bullying then, obviously not very nice for anybody and still going on today, which is terrible as far as children are concerned. So with you then, how did this start? What happened? Because 6 is very young.
Yeah, so I remember I was running around in the playground, and next thing I know, I think I bumped into somebody, and at the time I didn't realise, I didn't even know about bullying, and that's kind of where it all started.
What, was this an older boy or?
Yeah, so he was 2 years older, and most of the bullying from him was physical. This is when I was in Plymouth, and I remember one point I ran to a prefect who, they're probably about 11 at the time, to get some help. And at the time I didn't realize, I actually ran to his brother.
Oh, God, of all the people.
It was a challenge. And then, you know, at 6, it's hard. I think my parents possibly went to the school at the time and maybe said something. But it turns out that the boy that was bullying me, his dad was my dad's boss.
Right, makes it even more difficult.
It was tough. And I think the memory that I have is the teacher brought me out of my classroom, and he came out of his classroom, and she said, "Is it true? Have you been hitting Jason?" He said, "Yes, because he's been calling me names." Teacher told me off, and the bullying just seemed to escalate.
Right. Okay. So he saw you as a victim then, I guess.
I guess so. That was my first experience with it in my first school. We moved with my dad's job 3 years later. We moved to Bristol, and because of going from school to school, and I hadn't really played much football. I wasn't very good at football. Mm-hmm. And the school in Bristol was very much, you need to play football. And I remember, again, you know, teasing, building up and being more and more kind of, again, there was a physical element, but also sort of things that happened along that path. And it continued into my next school. And I think sometimes kids find something, whether it's a weakness or something that somebody has, and that becomes a challenge. I remember many times standing there wanting to play football, and the boy who turned up was, you know, it's my ball, and, you know, you'd wait there and hopefully get a game and say, well, the sides are fair, you can wait, and if someone leaves, you can join, and then someone else would turn up and you just let them play. So you'd find there's lots of elements of that. And I didn't realize at the time I had dyslexia, but when it was, you know, read out loud in class, often you'd make a mistake and the class would laugh, and you'd be quite apprehensive of what was going to happen next in terms of reading.
Yeah. So were you quite shy as a child?
I can't remember. One of my teachers told my parents that I had a lot of natural exuberance and not to let me lose it. I remember days going to school where, you know, you'd feel your heart beating and your mouth would be dry, and you'd just go into school and it'd be very uncomfortable. And it kind of carried on throughout sort of many years. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, at least a turning point that stopped the physical bullying was I started to do, and I found that really had a huge impact in terms of me being a bit of confidence, and judo and rugby. And those two things really made a difference. And I think at one point I defended myself, and as a result of that.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. When you stand up for yourself, quite often it stops. But as children, we're taught, well, you know, you go to the teacher, you don't fight back. I actually told my son to ask the pick out one, just say to the, because he had a gang that was bullying him. And I said, just
just say, you know, I'll fight one of you. Fighting all of you is just not right, but I'll fight one of you. And it took a lot of courage, but he was quite a big lad. And it took a lot of courage, but he said that. And as soon as he said that, they all walked off and never bothered him again. So
I think not at the time, but since then I've spent a lot of time learning about the brain, learning about personal development. And I think the journey that kind of unfolded was, you know, I did my judo. I developed glandular fever, which meant I had to stop judo and I had to stop karate. Right. And so things really shifted and changed. And I think the thing that I realized when I started to do my chiropractic degree many years later, you know, I had the desire to work with patients, but I think that made me shy and I wouldn't necessarily be myself. And I was conscious that I used to have this belief that, you know, when someone got to know me after two or three times meeting me, I would start to be more relaxed. Well, first impressions are so important. So whether you're going for a job or for me meeting patients, it was so important to make that shift. And so I think that's when I started to, you know, I was already a second dan black belting first black belt in karate at this point. So I'd moved from judo to karate and did various things from the physical side, but I hadn't really worked on the mindset. And so I found myself at my first Tony Robbins conference. There was 8,000 people and myself walking on hot coals and sort of working on that side of things. And the shift that happened after that mindset shift, I found that there was lots of things that I had been procrastinating on that I hadn't realized. I had a fear of public speaking. And although I could do it, I used to feel afterwards shaken for maybe a couple of hours. And so part of my journey was to kind of be able to help more people. So I started to work on, you know, meeting people in a confident way. And that really shifted things. And I think the biggest shift, I mean, they say that you do more for others than you do yourself. I found that I was, you know, been doing sponsored swimming and sponsored walks and all sorts of things. But one of my patients asked me to come and do a talk for their stroke group. It was one of the first talks that I did in my practice. And I remember feeling the fear, thinking, well, can I speak to these people and everything. There's lots of kind of negative self-talk or doubts that was there, but I'd conditioned myself to say yes and to figure out how to do it. So I did that. And I found that I went from building my confidence within speaking to doing well over 700 talks locally, raising over £10,000 for charity.
Wow, amazing.
Doing those talks. And I found myself a number of years later being asked to speak to some chiropractors from all over Europe about speaking. which was very strange. So that company awarded me International Chiropractor of the Year for services to the profession. So I think part of that journey, I kind of realized that you can sometimes turn a fear or something that at one stage, you can always go back in, you can always retell the story in a more empowering way and find a way to use what you've learned or use what's happened to enable you to get stronger. It can empower you. And I learned so much about the mind at the time. And I think one of the things that I realized from a bully's point of view is whether we put the idea of speaking to a group or speaking to a doctor or speaking to a teacher on a pedestal, by putting them on a pedestal, mentally, your self-esteem shrinks. And what happens is by kind of visualizing it in that way, the more you make something important, the more that an unbalanced importance of how great something is.
If they're up there, then you must be down there, and then you're looking up at them. Yeah. So that automatically puts you in a victim state, so to speak, which bullies will pick up on that.
Yes, exactly. And interestingly, the psychology I learned later is for the bully to feel better about themselves, they're elevating themselves onto a pedestal and deliberately putting somebody down. Yeah. And so the opposite happens. So the bully trying to belittle someone or to say something or to do something to give them that own feeling of power by making someone else's self-esteem shrink. And neither are healthy at all in any way. It's all in a state of imbalance. And, you know, and I think part of that journey is to kind of understand that balance. And, you know, they say confidence comes from within. I remember doing, you know, tapes on confidence, listening to Paul McKenna, reading his book and various other bits and pieces. But it's interesting because once I felt that I had that, I didn't feel like I needed to listen to it anymore. It was It was almost a journey, but the transformation, the change can sometimes be quite quick, even though it might take a few years to develop that. And even now, even when I'm going to give a talk, I might feel that I'm nervous. That's not a fear. That's, you know, I guess your nervous system saying, am I prepared? And I'd like to say to myself, I've trained my butterflies to fly in formation.
Brilliant. I love that term. Yeah. Because fear is nothing to fear, in effect. It's just your alarm bells going off saying, I think we might be in danger here, because it's a prehistoric conditioning, isn't it? So, and it's just something saying, well, I think we may be walking into danger, just watch out. And if you then don't start to panic, you will calm yourself down.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I found by going on these conferences, I didn't really have a fear of walking on hot coals, but I had a fear of other things. So another course that I did, which is similar, we had to break an arrow with our throat, and looking around the group, and in my mind I was thinking, well, if they can do it, I can do it, if they can do it, I can do it. And then they said, write your fear on the arrow, and I was like, well, what is my fear? And then it, I don't know where it came from, but my fear was going first. So I wrote that on the arrow, asked the group, do you mind if I go first? I broke my arrow first, but what happened in that moment was then everybody else then said, can you hold my arrow for me to do it? So what I realized at that point, that was my first distinction in leadership, is leaders conquer their fear first. And sometimes by doing something, you only need to be a minute ahead or an hour ahead, and then people look to you for advice. I didn't know any more about doing it than anyone else. I just managed to control my fear faster. And I'd already done other stuff at that point. And so by recognizing that, I then challenged myself. So the fear of speaking, I went and did more talks. I went and spoke on bigger stages or different opportunities. And then I found, I guess you'd call it, rather than fear, it would be comfort zone. And so I'd redefine the language and said, okay, what things can I do to stretch myself? Not to the point of shock zone, because that's when you do freeze up, but what can I do that stretches my comfort zone when I can go and break through that? Because every time I break through that, I find that I have an energy, something shifts, and it's almost like you grow your comfort zone to the next level. And that enables you to take on those kind of challenges more easily. And so, you know, you're building the reference points of experience behind you to be able to create that momentum.
Yeah. And so do you think, I mean, looking back, do you think that the bullying has led you to where you are today?
Absolutely. I think that I know I wouldn't have done judo, and I probably wouldn't have done karate if I hadn't had that. That was something that drove me to do that. The discomfort and shyness or meeting new people I wanted to overcome. When I was younger, I didn't know those strategies. I didn't know of the various opportunities that were available. So it opened doors, and those doors led me to do things in a way that I probably wouldn't have done if I hadn't had. I think that maybe the stress and the constant stress of the bullying depleted my immune system and made me more, as it suffer more from the viral fatigue after the glandular fever. So I think even from a health point of view, as a chiropractor and understanding how stress impacts our immune system and our nervous system, I think without all of that, I wouldn't have. I probably wouldn't have written my book. I wouldn't have been doing what I'm doing. I may not have even been a chiropractor, because at one point I wanted to do medicine. And so it's strange, because I would say I wouldn't wish bullying on anyone at all, yet I wouldn't want to change my experience, because I feel it's given me depth of character and understanding. And sometimes when you've been through something and you've made lessons from that and turned things around as a result of that, there's so much depth to that. It gives you the ability, for me, I mean, that's my purpose, is to help people and so in whatever area. And I think that gives empathy, it gives compassion. And so, yeah, that's kind of been my experience there.
Yeah, I think the universe does it. We've got a path that we're supposed to go down, and we do get clues along the way. And a lot of the time that is going through a trauma of some sort. so that when you come out of that, the other side, you come out into the light again, you've got that experience and that knowledge that you can then pass on to other people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so your book then is about steps to reduce stress. Can you give us a little bit more information on that?
Well, of course, absolutely. So I've identified over the years, there's five different types of stress. So there's physical stress. So from posture, from trauma, from childbirth, or all sorts of different physical manifestations of stress. There's emotional stress from lifestyle and things that affect us, from all different stresses in life. There's nutritional, chemical and environmental stresses, and I call them the five dimensions of stress. And the thing is with stress, our body has an incredible ability to adapt to stress. So what happens is you have this stress, your body adapts, and it adapts, and once it gets to the point where it can't adapt, then you get an injury or you get sick. And so a lot of medicine focuses, this is the disease and this is the medication for the disease or the treatment for the disease. And I think that the way my take on and my book and philosophy is a lot of the chronic health problems that people face may stem from lifestyle. Sometimes you have that lifestyle stress over a long period of time, and then that leads to disease or pathology or damage of your organs, and that can lead to that problem, and at that point you may need medical help. However, by working on reducing those stresses physically through maybe chiropractic or exercises or a combination, improving your nutrition, working on mindset, meditation, mindfulness, and just working through the different stresses to reduce them. You're never going to get rid of stress, but to be able to optimize your life so you're having less of these stresses on a day-to-day basis, you're optimizing your health. And whether that's for healing and repair from a chronic illness, whether that's performance in sport or performance in your mind or whatever it is you're trying to achieve there, or if it's a weight loss goal, or if it's reducing inflammation in the body, all of these stresses, the healthier you are, the better your body deals with the challenges that we throw at it. So for having a healthier life in your later life, one of the most important things I believe is to identify the stresses early. And you know, sometimes people use smoking as the example. We know smoking is unhealthy. Some people find that they become addicted for various reasons. There might be a social reason that people get addicted. There might be the psychological reason, or it might be there's something else going on. But smoking is a vehicle to remove stress. It's an unhealthy and disempowering vehicle, but it's a vehicle, as is drinking alcohol or comfort eating or going into rage. Examples of empowering vehicles could be going for a run or meditating or doing some yoga or Pilates. So there's different ways that we can reduce the stresses in our body, and you find that you're either on a pathway where you're in reaction and doing the vehicles that create that stress, or you can set about things or practices in your life that reduce the stress on a regular basis rather than waiting till you're in that sort of shock zone. And we're talking generally. As a chiropractor, I work individually with patients and meet them where they're at. So some people are going to come in and they've got raging back pain and sciatica. So going for a run is the last thing on their mind. They want to get out of pain, so we need to meet them where they're at and work with their pain and help them with their body and start to understand exactly what's gone on and you know, what stress has caused the disc to go, rather than the disc has gone and there's the nerve pain. We'll look at why is that happening and why hasn't the body been getting better. So we look at those stresses, and the best way to think about it is 20% of what you do gets you 80% of the results. So if you imagine a seesaw, on one side there's things that make it worse and on the other side there's things that make it better. If you can identify what those stresses are, then that helps you get healthier.
Brilliant, good advice. And your book is on Amazon?
It is. It's available on Amazon. So yes, it's called Thrive. If you search Thrive book and Jason Gould, and that's where they'll find that.
Okay. Well, I will put that in the show notes. And so the England Karate Squad then, how did you come to be working with them?
So it's the England, the style of karate is called Goju-Ryu karate. And when I was in Bournemouth, I hadn't got back into martial arts since I had my glandular fever. Mm. And one of my friends was taking part in a karate class locally. So I went down, and it turns out our chief instructor of our style been a world champion and has had and trained other world champions in karate in that style, was running a dojo in Bournemouth. So I ended up training with them. I got my first black belt while I was still down there. And we used to go on what we called a karate summer holiday. So we'd be doing 5 hours a day for 5 days of training. And then in the afternoons, we'd be sort of, well, while everyone relaxed by the pool, I'd be adjusting people. But that was kind of me getting to know them. And as a result, when they started to do their squad training in Stratford, I'd go along and give advice. And then at the World Championships in South Africa, I was invited along and to help out. And a lot of what I did at the time, some of it was first aid and some of it was helping prepare the body. And we won 3 gold medals, a silver and a bronze.
Yeah, it must have been exciting. Excellent.
Yeah, great.
So going back to the bullying in your school days then, because things don't seem to have changed at school. You know, there's still an awful lot of bullying going on. What do you think we could do as a society to change that?
It's a good question. I think an awareness for the children. I think sometimes what one person might define as bullying, bully might not define as bullying. So, and I'm not negating it in any way. No. What could be seen as teasing and banter from one person done consistently could be affecting another person on a deep level. And I think understanding a little bit about what children can do to help support their psychology, maybe whether that's supporting parents, supporting children that are going through it, is very different now I say similar and different. Now you've got the social media aspects of it as well.
Yeah.
And I think one of my inspirational mentors is Nick Vujicic. His videos are on, he's called, I think, No Arms, No Legs, No Worries. And he's gone to schools and he's taught. So I wouldn't say it's something where I have a level of expertise. I've worked on myself and I've had that journey. There are motivational speakers and people that really specialize in this subject who are already providing incredible support for schools. And I think what I would like to see is people within those experiences maybe working with the schools, or maybe the schools reaching out to find out what they can do. And I think that there's maybe a cultural thing that happens within the schools as to how things are tolerated and the ethos of the school. I know just from speaking to a couple of parents locally, some of the schools are about kindness and others, bullying seems to happen more frequently. And I think whether that's an awareness, maybe whether that's a training that needs to happen, I don't know. I don't know what the challenges are enough to give that advice. What I do know is it's always been the case that it's there. So you may not be able to change all behaviours. What you can do is find the children that are struggling and empower them and give them the tools to help their confidence and help their skill set so they grow and develop that themselves.
Yeah. Being aware as well, I guess, as a parent and as a teacher, if a child suddenly changes and becomes quiet and withdrawn, then there's obviously something going on that you need to investigate. And the teacher just saying, I'll look into it, shouldn't be enough. It should be like, you know, a joint effort in helping both sides, the bully and the victim, I think, both sides, because the bully is obviously crying out for attention for some reason. So that needs to be, you know, looked at as well. But I guess teachers would say, well, how are we supposed to have the time to do all that and do our job, especially in these times?
I know that some people I've spoken to in the past that work in this field have worked with student ambassadors. So they take students on leadership courses where they develop them, and that development turns into what community type services they can do within the school. And it takes a quite a robust set of confidence to be able to elicit that change. So whether the students that have had some of those issues then take take that on. I honestly don't know.
It's obviously something that somebody's got to take hold of and have a look at somewhere along the line, haven't they?
Absolutely.
I think it would be a really good mission for somebody to take on anyway.
Yes. And what you find is, I think, just getting that point where the light bulb goes off and you start to see someone's empowered, they start to be able to, you know, if they change, their confidence changes, the way they carry themselves change, or what they say changes, they tend to respond to situations rather than react to situations.
Yeah.
It's going to change the perception. And sometimes a lot of bullies, in most cases, my belief is they're looking for weakness. And if that weakness disappears because that weakness has been changed for whatever reason, then that can sometimes stop that person from experiencing it. That's kind of a possibility there.
Mm. So if anybody's listening to this that wants more information or wants to get in touch with you, how can somebody get in contact with you?
So they could contact me either through my Chislehurst Chiropractic Clinic website. There's an email address on there. Or they could, if they're going to purchase a copy of my book, there's a lot of my advice. There's a whole chapter on mindset there with some exercises. There's also a link to an email through the book as well.
Excellent. I shall put that in the show notes then. And is there a message that you wanted to leave the listeners with?
Yes. Yeah, so I think the main message is, wherever you're at now, if this is meeting you or one of your family in a time of challenge or crisis or difficulty, there are so many things that you can do or get support with or get advice on that can really help you to get to where you want to be faster, whether it's a physical or mental or emotional or nutritional challenge. And there's a lot of advice out there than just the general advice that's there.
Lovely. That's really good. Okay. So it's been absolutely wonderful hearing your story and talking to you today. And I'm so pleased that everything worked out for you. And hopefully, you know, it gives some courage and hope to others listening that maybe are going through the same situation in, you know, in any shape or form, because bullying's not always just children, is it?
Not at all. Absolutely.
No. So unfortunately. So thank you so much for coming in today. It's been lovely talking to you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to today's story. And as always, if you want to ensure you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe. And if you yourself have a story to tell, then please do get in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. And until next week, take care of yourself, stay safe, and I will see you soon. Goodbye.